You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842. And as promised, I am honored once again to have on these airways none other than Attorney Kate Lincoln Goldfinch. She is the CEO and founding attorney of Lincoln Goldfinch Law, an Austin-based firm serving clients globally. Inspired by her experience helping detained families, Kate has dedicated her career to fighting for immigrants' rights and dignity. Under her leadership, the firm has assisted more than 10,000 clients with family-based immigration and humanitarian cases. A graduate of the University of Texas Austin School of Law, Kate served on former Mayor Steve Adler's Commission on Immigration Affairs and was recognized as one of Austin's monthly 2024 top immigration attorneys. She remains active within the legal community. Good morning and welcome back.
And thanks for having me on again.
Yeah, let me go to a couple things. And, you know, we're here, the election nears, and there's more and more, you know, misinformation about what's happening with immigration. Here is one. U.S. will not renew legal status for hundreds of thousands of immigrants. Many could remain in the country under other programs. Can you explain to us what that means?
There's a few programs that are being pulled back or canceled. I don't know which headline that is, but the most recent
This is in Reuters. This is in Reuters, but go ahead.
Is it about the Haitian TPS program? Can you tell?
No, this is, let's see. Okay, this actually is about, the Haitian immigration program.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a few of these going around right now, and it's really hard to keep up with all of the immigration goings on. But there are a few temporary programs to protect people from certain countries that are being revoked at the moment. That one that we're referring to is temporary protected status for Haitians that has been in place for a little bit over a decade since they had that huge earthquake. And TPS is a protection for people from other countries that says if there's been some danger in their country, maybe it's a hurricane, maybe it's an earthquake, maybe it's an outbreak of Ebola, then the United States says all the people who are in the United States from that country cannot safely return home. And so we're going to grant them temporary protected status and they can get work permission, et cetera, while they're here. But this type of protection is meant to be temporary and it can be revoked at any time. So anytime someone's on a status like this, they really should be exploring what other options they have available to them. Because, for example, if Trump were to get elected, a lot of these programs would get pulled back. They don't provide really more than like 1 year of safety for immigrants.
It's election time. So 8 U.S. states to vote on amendments to ban non-citizen voters. Are we inundated with many non-citizens, illegal immigrants who are voting in our election system?
Absolutely not. There is zero evidence of that. But a lot of conservative political candidates would have us fear otherwise. It's a powerful fear-based message that gets people really worked up and upset. But I can tell you there is no data to support that immigrants who are ineligible to vote are actually going and voting, or that there's any election fraud going on with immigrants. It's not happening. But so this is all, it's all a waste of energy, of taxpayer dollars. And I mean, really, we can just ignore it. Anytime somebody is on some pulpit talking about immigrants voting, you should just ignore it, because it's just not factual.
Well, you know, you and I can ignore it, but there are a lot of people who are just inhaling that. And it just fuels the fire. And that's why it's so great to have you on, because, you know, you know, and many people don't know, and they get their information from Fox News and from Donald Trump, and they think that stuff is true.
Yeah, and I mean, you have to think about the effect of messages like that, and really conservative politicians really win when they spread messages of fear like this. They get more votes, they get more campaign donations, and ultimately at the end of the day, they get more money and power. And that's what they gain when they're saying things that are falsehoods, but that get people motivated. It's the same with, you know, border surges and trafficking and all of that stuff. I'm not saying that there aren't issues at the border. There are. But the rhetoric of immigration is the danger of the nation at this time is false. And we've seen this before. I mean, this is, you know, we've had centuries now in this country. We may not be as old as other nations, but we've had centuries of where we've seen just a repeat of this type of language used by politicians, but it's been against different types of immigrants in the past, you know, Irish Catholics or Italians or German people, you know. And so now we're talking about mostly Latino people at the southern border are mostly the target, Haitians too, you know, but it's the same message, just a different people. And it's not true. The things that are being said about immigrants, like, you know, the presidential debate about the, you know, Haitian immigrants eating pets in Springfield, completely false. And yet it is such a powerful and strong motivator, and it keeps the political base activated, really upset, really motivated. And there, it's all based on falsehood.
Well, so, you know, Attorney Goldfinch, here's Donald Trump on October 4th. They grab young girls and they slice them up right in front of their parents, Trump told the crowd at a rally. I mean, you know, to have somebody who's seeking to become the president of the United States, our nation is made up of immigrants, and yet there's a person who wants to become the president of the United States using that kind of rhetoric to rally a base to hate other immigrants who are looking to do what many other immigrants did, which is the makeup of this nation.
I know. It's shocking to hear him talk like that. And, you know, I've been an immigration lawyer in Texas since 2008, and I've worked with thousands of immigrants. And I know for certain that, you know, the vast majority of immigrants who are coming to this country are exactly the types of people that we want here. What, you know, regardless of whether they're some highly skilled engineer or someone who, you know, cleans offices at night, these are the type of people who are brave enough to close down their lives in the country where they are and make their way all the way here, where they may not know the language, they don't know the culture, and the whole purpose is creating a better future for themselves and for their children. And the bravery that is required, the ambition that is required for somebody like that is so impressive and admirable. And the statistics, you know, it's like I try to go back to the numbers, because people can disagree on whether you know, humanitarian causes move you. But the statistics show that immigrants commit crime at a much lower rate than U.S. citizens. And so if we really want to talk about what is a danger to our community, it's not immigrants. It just isn't. And that's not to say that no immigrant is a danger. I mean, it's like you can't paint a broad brush. I'm sure that there is an immigrant who commits crime, you know, but it's at a lower rate than U.S. citizens. And why don't we focus instead on what's causing all of these mass shootings? You know, who's doing those mass shootings? Those are not the immigrants. So it's just, it's almost easy for this base of voters to be led around by Trump, by politicians like him, almost as if they're on a leash. And all you have to do is say the word immigrant plus drugs plus trafficking plus children together jumbled in a sentence, and it achieves the result that you want, which is everybody's terrified and mad, and they're going to do whatever it takes to get you elected.
So you are a nationally recognized civil rights attorney for immigrants. So what is the truth about the number of immigrants who are currently coming across the border? We are still hearing from Donald Trump and Republicans that record numbers of immigrants are still coming across the border. Where is truth and fiction in that sentence?
So the truth is there are still undocumented immigrants coming to seek asylum at the border. There always has been, ever since we've had asylum as a protection in our nation. And when we closed down the border during COVID completely, there created this backlog of people, of asylum seekers. And when that was lifted, because COVID, you know, the pandemic protections were lifted, we saw an increase in people coming in because these were people who had been waiting for the opportunity. And so at the early, you know, end of last year, early part of this year, we did see record numbers at the border. But the reality is this stuff is always cyclical. It's always seasonal. It's always impacted by what's going on around the globe politically, with wars, with climate change. I mean, it's going to fluctuate. So at the end of the day, you know, getting ourselves to a place where we don't have asylum seekers is an unrealistic goal. We offer asylum protections. We have ever since World War II. That's who we are as a nation. So our goal needs to be reliable, steady, predictable, orderly, humane processing of asylum seekers. And we had that actually in place before Trump for about 20 years. We had a way that people could come to the border and ask for asylum, and they'd go through what's called a credible fear interview. And if they didn't pass, they'd get sent home. And if they passed, they'd come in and prepare for their hearings. And Trump dismantled that. So we're still in the process of getting back to that. And it's not actually very complicated what needs to be done.
So hang on. Attorney Kate Lincoln Goldfinch, immigration attorney, is back on the Earl Ingram Show. 855-752-4842. We'll return.
Give me the night. Give me the night. Give me the night. Give me the night.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842. As promised, my guest is Attorney Kate Lincoln Goldfinch. She is a nationally acclaimed attorney, immigration attorney. She's right there at the border, Austin, Texas. Attorney Goldfinch, can you, you know, clarify what we keep hearing from Donald Trump and others is, if Joe Biden and Kamala Harris would have just continued the keep people in Mexico, you know, plan that Donald Trump had put in place, we wouldn't be having these issues that we're having now. Is it so simple as to say we would have kept all these people bottled up in Mexico and this would have been, you know, something that would have prevented us from having what we're dealing with now?
No, the Remain in Mexico program was horrific. It really didn't work for anyone. It created a big strain between us and the government of Mexico. I personally visited the camps where refugees were staying, and it's like the worst thing you can imagine. It's these refugee camps without the support of, you know, the Red Cross or the UN. It was just these makeshift camps really right at the border where people from Central America and South America were living, but there was no school or medical care or food or electricity or water. And, you know, I saw a baby that was born in one of these camps. I mean, it was just horrific. And it created strains between us and Mexico. It also invited cartels within Mexico to come to the border and start preying upon these migrants because they're not in their homeland. And so they are routinely kidnapped by cartels and suffer all sorts of horrific violence that I won't go into. But it's just a really terrible system overall for everyone. And it doesn't, you know, this Remain in Mexico program was keeping people out for the whole entirety of their asylum process, which can take, you know, a year or so, which is, you know, when I referenced the system that we had before that, we would assess someone's potential eligibility for asylum within a matter of days, just by doing an interview between that person and an asylum officer. Like, tell me everything that happened to you. And they talk for about an hour. And then that asylum officer would say, you might qualify, and so therefore I'm going to place you under, you know, detention, some alternative to detention, release you to a relative, and then you're going to go before an immigration judge and prepare your case. Or they would say, you're not eligible based on what you're telling me, and I'm going to, you know, have you sent back to your homeland. That was a functioning system. And so really what we need to be looking at, not as, you know, can we just keep people out of the country? It's, can we put resources into good quality processing and screening of asylum seekers so that people aren't, you know, stuck in this limbo here or in Mexico?
Attorney Lincoln Goldfinch, COVID backed up the court system tremendously. And so I remember a year or so, a couple of years ago, they were talking about just how far back the system was backed up. Has there been relief, or is this just going to be an ongoing issue?
It is an ongoing issue. And here's the reason, really. Yeah, COVID messed up the system, but also the resources that we have are misplaced. So, anytime there's any kind of passage of a bill or, you know, budget allocation, the only thing that there ever is an agreement on between the two sides of Congress is border enforcement. That's the only thing that they'll, you know, essentially the Republicans will spend money on. So it's, you know, drones and border protection, you know, agents, et cetera. And our budget for the Department of Homeland Security is over $100 billion per year. I mean, it's vastly higher than all of the other federal law enforcement budgets combined. It's just insane the amount of money that we already put toward border enforcement. If we could just calm down about the border, understand that the border is protected, and then use some of that money and allocate it toward the processing of cases, we would see a reduction in the backlog. We need to hire judges. We need to create more inventory, right, of court proceedings with the resources that we have. But we're not doing that. And another thing that I'll just say overall is that one of the main, you know, asylum, when we're talking about asylum, it's a small sliver of the overall immigration issue in this nation. Two-thirds of the people who immigrate to this country come because of a family member here. And then the rest typically are employment. And asylum is just like a small percentage. If we could get our act together, or our congressman could, and get their act together and pass immigration reform that actually reflects the needs of immigration in this nation, and we had more visas available, more options for seasonal labor, then that would have a massive impact on what's going on at the border. Because the reality is we have, as a country, we have an economic need for immigrants to fill jobs. And so the jobs are here for them. And we are issuing an unspoken invitation to immigrants who want to come here and work. But we're not also offering a legal structure for them to do that. And then we're getting furious when people are coming and applying for asylum. Because there are people who are applying for asylum who aren't eligible for it. We all know that. So why don't we instead create a system where people who want to come here and work, which we need, can do it legally, and then leave asylum for the people who are actually in danger. If we could do that one thing, it would actually calm everything down in one fell swoop. But it would require Republican politicians to have an agreement on something that is pro-immigration, which they haven't been willing to do since Reagan.
Attorney Lincoln Goldfinch, thank you. I hope we can get you back on before the election. Because with all the people listening, they have not been able to hear that kind of truth about what's really happening because of all of the noise that they've been hearing from the Republicans. Thank you very much. We'll reach out again soon.
I'll be on anytime. Thanks.
Everybody. All right. Thank you. Calvin, who do we have up next?
Yeah, we have Ayomi Abuse, who is the statewide black constituency organizer for the Planned Parenthood Advocates of Wisconsin.
All right, on the Earl Ingram Show.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842. And my guest, Miss Ayomi Obuse, is rocking to the music. She's already hooked on the Earl Ingram Show. You are the statewide black constituency organizer for Planned Parenthood Advocates of Wisconsin. Good morning to you. How are you?
Good morning. I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. Let's talk about the black community, the importance, role that our community is going to play in this election. I keep telling people, President Biden and Donald Trump, and they just keep coming to Wisconsin. They just keep coming to Milwaukee. The power in our vote is extremely important and key, as it has been historically, to whom the president of the United States is going to be. As you move around in these black communities and talk about representing Planned Parenthood, what are you hearing?
Yeah, I am hearing frustration, especially in the beginning before, you know, it was Kamala and just the Biden administration, as though we were feeling, marginalized and feeling unheard and feeling as though politicians and policies were out of touch with their community. And it still felt today. It's not a feeling that it goes away over time, but I think with Kamala stepping in, with her framework of talking especially about reproductive health, we're seeing more joy, we're seeing more hope, And now with organizations like ours who are, you know, been doing this work and trying to empower our communities, we're seeing people finding their spirit back and putting that into this election. And so, like we know, when we win Wisconsin, we win the nation. And when you win the Black vote, you're securing your vote for everyone else, because a lot of the experiences that we feel is felt by everyone. And so when we center ourselves and our community, we start to realize that we're centering everyone.
You know, it's pretty clear that your focus, when you come into the Black community, is the younger population, because my generation votes. What are you hearing? Because there's some in our community, in the younger generation, that doesn't see voting as something that's going to change their reality. But when you talk about reproduction, does that add something to the conversation?
It does add something to the conversation, but I also think that we often tend to say, like, young people need to get more involved, this group needs to get more involved, when it's really intergenerational mobilization. We need to hear the stories of how our leaders, our grandparents, have made an impact around us. Everything is political. And when we realize that the reason why we can get off on Saturday, minimum wage, everything is that we can create change around us, we realize that we have no choice but to use our voice. And so I think what we need to do, and what young people are definitely starting to do, is make movement and action irresistible. Make it something that you look forward to, because you realize that you have the power to do something about your surroundings. And reproductive justice and reproductive health is something that we interact with a lot. But we also felt what it was like to have our rights taken away. And so to have an impact in something that became something that we forgot how impactful it was, how it changes our lives so much, and realizing that we can do something more, started to make it irresistible and started to, you know, use social media to kind of expand that topic.
So if you're just joining us, I'm joined by Ayomi Obuse. She is the statewide Black constituency organizer for Planned Parenthood Advocates of Wisconsin. You talk about reproduction, productive rights, and when you're talking to women and young ladies, yeah, their ears are wide open, but how do the young men, is there any connection at all with them to this fight?
Absolutely. One of the greatest things about our ambassador program, our Black ambassadorship, is that we have men joining on, Black men joining on our program. And it's not something that is new. Black men have been taking care of Black women. And so when we acknowledge that, hey, like, the birthing process, families, includes men in those conversations, then we start to realize, like, this is how we start to build power. Because we have to have all of our parts. We have to have men included. And so we do in our program as well. But also, I think that just looking at the research that we've done, so we've done research for a little over a year about how we talk about reproductive health in the Black community. And we found that, you know, men often don't feel like they're included in this movement because of our language. But it's so important that we center everyone. Of course, highlighting queer Black women, but also men as well, because they do have a role to play in families and the longevity of our Black communities.
You know, I'm pretty sure that this listening audience of mine does not know about the death rate of birth with and the inherent dangers Black women face in giving birth.
Yep. It does not matter your economic status. We see Beyonce, we saw Serena Williams talk about their birthing experiences and how they had to advocate for their own lives with experts. And so this is something that we interact with on a day-to-day basis. Black women are 5 times more likely to die during childbirth. And so although Planned Parenthood, for example, we don't offer prenatal services, we work with organizations like Harambe Village, Maroon Calabash, Black Child Development Institute, who center Black women in the birthing process. We work with doulas and talk about the importance of doulas in our communities. Because if we're talking about reproductive justice, we also have to talk about dignity as well. And the intersectionality and everything.
So when you're talking about reproductive health and all of those different things, what's different between what Kamala Harris and the Democrats are offering than what Donald Trump and the Republicans are offering? Is there a distinct difference in what people can expect?
Well, the distinct difference is the conversation about family usually does not look like a black or brown family. The conversation about choice in itself is privilege. Black people don't have the privilege to decide between two options. Usually it's a hard decision to make about your health care, especially when it comes to abortion care. And so there's a lot of privilege in the language that they're using right now in their conversations and their debates. Freedom and privacy are other words that don't include us in that. Even when we look at Roe was still lacking in so many ways because it included those languages in it. So we have a long way to go. And in Kamala's campaign, we're seeing that she is starting to center us in their language and work with organizations who are doing the work, like Sister Song.
You know, we got a lot of callers, and so we don't have a lot of time. So I'm going to get out of the way and connect you with the callers. Let's go to Karina from Milwaukee. Good morning to you, Karina. You say what?
Good morning. Good morning, Naomi. You're doing a very needed job, and I am in the healthcare. And what I hear from the Republican side of the patients we have is that one thing prevalent that, Black community especially using the abortions as birth control. And you were talking about doula. Is there a possibility? I have several doulas. I'm working with the credentials, and they're having a kind of hard time to get through the clients and to get through that portion of the education and caring and managing the and helping the Black community with the whole process of being pregnant and birth. And most importantly, after pregnancy as well, because the coverage is so limited after pregnancy. That 6 weeks is ridiculous.
Hey, Karina, thank you very much for the call. First, explain what a doula is.
Yeah. So a doula is a birth worker. It's similar to a midwife. They stay with you from before you are pregnant, during, and after, and they're your advocate within our healthcare system or even at home doing home births as well.
All right. So you want to respond to the question Karina was asking?
Yeah. So in terms of, I think the question, I'll try to make sure I remember it, is asking how to connect with doulas. So the process is very, a lot of people get their certification and they begin doing their work and they aren't attached to a collective. Because of that, and because there's not a registry list like you would find with real estate agents, it's hard to see like where doulas exist in Wisconsin unless they're connected with a larger network. So we work with the larger networks, but often even in our staff, we have ambassadors that are also doulas on the side as well. So we interact with them in a unique ways because they show up in very unique and needed ways to meet the community where they're at. So I would say partnering up with a collective is the first place to start if you wanted to do more work with Planned Parenthood and navigating those steps.
So my guest is a Yomi Obuse, and she is a statewide Black constituency organizer for Planned Parenthood Advocates of Wisconsin. Let's go to Al from Milwaukee. Good morning to you, Al. You say what?
Well, Earl, you know I'm the president of my father's house.
Right.
We've been teaching parenting to men and women since 1994. This is the first I've heard of this organization and this lady. I need her phone number.
Right. You, Aomi, he is exactly correct. He is the father of, the work that he does. And so, can you give him a phone number?
Yeah, I will actually better give you an email so that way we can follow up. And for everyone else, it'll be AYOMI.OBUSEH at ppwy.org.
So, Al, here's what we'll be able to do. Calvin, so they can get this from where? Where? If, you know, because he's not going to have time to write all that down.
Yeah, yeah. I'll provide links in the show notes on the for the podcast, and you can find that at civicmedia.us/shows or Spotify or Apple Podcasts.
Yeah, so we'll make sure, Al, that you can connect with her. Thank you very much for the call. You know, Aomi, there's so much to discuss. I mean, this is what we're talking about now in this next 25, 28 days run. But after that, and people need to be aware, there's just tremendous amounts of work to be done in educating young women and young boys and young men about all of this. So your work doesn't end with the election.
No, we are here. We are going to continue to go, run as far as we can, and bring more people into this movement.
I'm going to tell you, I'm going to make sure I reach back out to you, and we do this from time to time, all right? We're going to make sure that happens. Hang on the phone lines, 855-752-4842. Aomi Obuse, I love that name. She is the statewide Black constituency organizer for Planned Parenthood Advocates of Wisconsin. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the last few minutes of the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842. My guest is Aomi Obuse. And you know, Aomi, I've been thinking about changing my name. And after hearing that, how about Toussaint? Toussaint. But anyway, she represents statewide Black constituency organization for the Planned Parenthood Advocates of Wisconsin. Let's go to CJ. Good morning to you, CJ. You say what?
Thank you for taking my call, Earl. And it is a beautiful name. Thank you for taking my question. And I've struggled with, you speak of women's health care rights. And I have a question. Is it true, a fact that I've heard, that more Black babies are aborted than are born every year?
So I feel like with those types of questions, oftentimes we're losing a lot of nuance. in the conversation, which is why even Planned Parenthood, we're kind of removing away from the narrative of like abortion and talking about like ending a pregnancy. And again, language is so important. In terms of the rate in which we have ended a pregnancy, there's so much into that conversation of why, you know, why that had to happen, why that decision was made. And so would suggest for sure doing a little bit more research into that, because it to simplify it would be a disservice to our community.
I think that's well said, young lady. Let's go to Tom from LA. Go ahead, Tom.
Yeah, you were saying how important messaging is, that I think that Planned Parenthood should start saying either a woman's right to choose or big government's right to choose, because of the fact that just because a woman has the right to choose doesn't necessarily mean that she's going to terminate a pregnancy. It means that it's her choice. And instead of making women into second-class citizens or cattle that our government is doing to them, women are wonderful human beings that should be treated with the respect, and also to know that they actually have a smart brain and can make the choice that's best for her, her family, and for the men in their lives. So I just would ask, you know, you were talking about messaging or about wording. It really is the message. It's either government's right to choose or a woman's right to choose.
Hey, Tom, thank you very much for the call. You want to respond to that, Aomi?
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, when we talk about reproductive health, it is a narrative that has gone in so many different directions. Now we're even seeing Republicans are starting to use that. And what does that mean to them? You know, everybody has their own different definition of reproductive health care and justice these days. It has just become such a highly politicized word. Our bodies are highly politicized at the moment and have been for very, you know, many years. But yes, we should be naming women. We should be naming people and families, and we should be calling folks out. And so I think Planned Parenthood has a focus, especially with our teams, like our Black Organizing Program and our RAIS and PPGen, to do outreach, to reaffirm language, empower people, and talk about their narratives that exist.
You know, you're hearing Republicans say, well, we don't think that the Roe versus Wade decision is going to impact much in this election because, you know, it's not as big a deal as it was, you know, several years back. What do you say to that? Have women forgotten?
No, we have not forgotten. Before I joined this role, I was a canvasser. I was going door to door when Roe fell. And when it was overturned, I was there hugging families every single day because of the experiences that have been felt and are currently experienced today.
And all women from all backgrounds, from all demographics.
Everyone. And, you know, socioeconomic class. It does not matter if you have money, if you don't have money, you'll find a way into getting reproductive health care, coming to Planned Parenthood and getting your needs met.
Young lady, thank you. It's been a pleasure. I will be reaching back out to you, especially before this election. That's Miss Aomi Obuse. And she is, again, the statewide Black community constituency organizer for Planned Parenthood of Wisconsin. I want to thank everybody who made the show go. Thank you, Calvin. Thank all of my guests. Thank you to the listening audience. Could not do it without you. Up next, Jane Madnair and Greg Bach, Madnair on Air. See you tomorrow with none other than my co-host, Sandy Williams. See you later.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.